Welcome to the Nature Photo Guys podcast,
where we talk about nature photography from gear to our philosophies and everything in between.
So grab a cup of coffee, sit back and relax.
You're listening to Joe Desjardins
and Chris Gibbs, the Nature Photo Guys.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Nature Photo Guys podcast.
We are super excited to be joined by a full-time educator and landscape photographer from Maple Ridge, British Columbia, whose work has been celebrated in countries around the world. An educator in the public system for 20 years, Brett decided to begin teaching photography and running workshops as a way to further his passion and spread the joy of this art form to others. His outstanding work has drawn the attention of Case Filters Canada, who brought him on as a partner. Please welcome to the show, Brett Michaud.
Thank you guys very much.
Hey Brett, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is quite an honor.
Pleasure is all ours.
Well, we are super excited to have you here, as Chris said in the intro. We're just going to have a, conversation, going to chit chat about a whole bunch of things. Actually what we're going to start with is the very first question we ask everybody. Tell the viewers a little bit about yourself, Brett.
Well, what can I say? I maybe am a little bit of a late starter to the photography world. I didn't really get a start in photography until about, I'd say, 5 or 6 years ago. I've always been a lover of photography from the time I was a little kid. We had some relatives who had National Geographic lying all over the house, and I'd go and spend hours looking through them and, most boys, young, curious boys, are drawn to National Geographic for different reasons, but I went for the landscape photography. And yeah. I just spent hours looking at the pictures and kind of, in the back of my head, marveling at the people who created those pictures and who were out there, in those foreign lands. And it really kind of intrigued me. Never once, though, thinking I could be one of those people making the photographs. And it wasn't until years later, I went to Europe with my son and got some nice pictures on my iPhone and kind of thought, I wonder what I could do with a nice camera. And that's when I kind of the whole journey started. So, from a photography standpoint, went out, bought a new camera and started taking pictures, and didn't turn out well at first. And my wife eventually bought me some lessons and then just took a deep dive into everything YouTube that I could get my hands on, read tons and tons of books, and obviously lots of practice out in the field. And here we are.
Well, that's crazy. Well, you answered our first two questions in one. So, I mean,
I tend to talk a lot. So just tell me.
No.
That's awesome.
That's great. So, that is, I wouldn't say it's a late start. I mean, you found your passion, right? Like you found photography, right? Whether you find it at 10 or you find it at, 40 or 50 or 60, whatever, right? It's great that you did, And by looking at your photos and your website, in 5 or 6 years, wow.
I was thinking the same thing. That's amazing images for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. Wow. That's a very, accelerated learning, I guess, a pace however you want to say it. Like, that's insane.
Thank you. It's funny. I get up quite early in the morning and I start watching YouTube. It's the only time that I kind of have to myself. We've got five kids. So, it's a busy household, and a lot of them have moved out and stuff, but, it's always busy going on all the time in our house. So I get up early and start watching my YouTube videos and, get about an hour's worth of video time in the morning and then off to work. So I've poured hundreds and hundreds of hours into the learning side of it. And that's kind of indicative of who I am as a person. When I take something on, I really go deep dive into it. I love the learning side of it. And maybe that's what brought me to education in the first place. But it's been so much fun. And, good for the mental health, getting out into nature and learning new things and trying new things and new It's been fantastic. Then there's so many different genres to go into, you know, and each has their own different way of doing things and things to, you know, how you learn and things to learn and styles. And I don't know, it's techniques. It's fantastic.
Well, I mean, you couldn't have started at a better time because, I mean, when I started 30 plus years ago on slide film, you know, and regular, you know, film, right? Yeah. You know, it was a tedious learning process because especially when you're shooting slide, it was a matter of recording all their settings, waiting for, you know, the 30 roll is 36. In that case, I was shooting like Velvia 50 or something like that. Yeah. I'd come back and then, you know, you'd match them up to the slides and learn that way, you know, and then, but even so after the fact, I mean, you were like, what, a week, 2 weeks to get it back.
Yeah.
And then sure. you're doing, you know, then you're trying to compare and then, you know, you're throwing most of it out and then you're trying something else. And then, you know, you keep moving forward. And photographers today, wow. I mean, you could learn and understand, you know, what it might take a photographer back then a year or two to learn in, you know, a month, 2 weeks, you know, if you do a deep dive into, you know, like you said, YouTube and books and online lessons and everything else.
Well, there's so many resources at your fingertips, eh? Like,
it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. So, I mean, anybody wanting to get into photography, it couldn't, you know, couldn't be a better time, honestly.
That's
you know,
true. So. Yeah, absolutely. It's been so much fun and met so many great people too. It's such a supportive community. And, you know, going to Light Chasers, meeting you guys, meeting Monica Deviat, Victoria Hack, Shane Turgeon. These people have, you know, changed who I am as a photographer and helped me grow so nice. Much. And I can't say enough good things about that experience. It really was truly the best thing that happened to my my photography career.
Excellent. Oh, and you're coming back this year?
Absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
I was trying to beat Chris as getting the first ticket this year. We'll see.
Maybe you did. Somebody did for sure.
We'll see. Yeah, I was pretty quick on the draw, Chris. I got to
admit. That's good. Well, you know, it was such a fun time. And, you know, meeting all these people, there was a lot of people. I thought it was hilarious. We were meeting all these people that, you know, you're friends with on social media already, not even knowing, and you get to talk to them in person and just, it was a great event. And I can't wait to come back too. So.
That's fantastic. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys again there.
It's going to be a great time and maybe even getting out shooting and stuff too. You know, it's not just about the conference and sitting through a talk. You know, Shane had all these outings and little get-togethers and everything else too, which was pretty cool. He had the critique sessions and all kinds of stuff. So for everybody listening, you know, we'll put a link to the Light Chasers in the description below too. So, you know, they can get an idea who's coming. I think probably by the end of February, the full list of speakers should be listed on Light Chasers. Shane's got 6 listed already. And I think by the end of February, he'll have somewhat of an agenda for, you know, the activities outside, you know, the lectures and stuff, right? So.
Well, I was impressed with Alistair Benn coming. He's someone that I've spent a lot of time watching online. So, you know, getting to see these people in person, it's funny, YouTube is a weird thing because these people become kind of mini celebrities in your life. And when you see them and get to chat with them, it kind of brings it to life. You feel like a bit of a fanboy out there, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Well, it's a weird experience.
Adam Gibbs last year, that was pretty cool.
That was really cool.
For sure. And just for everybody, you know, the next Light Chasers is May 26th to 28th, in case anybody's wondering there. Okay. So
highly recommended.
And it's well over, I know it's over 50% sold. So if you're thinking of going, you may want to get your tickets sooner or later. Yep, 100%. Sure. So
Pincher Creek, Alberta.
No, that's great. So again, another learning resource, right?
Absolutely.
You know, that kind of helped you along there.
Learning resource and just being in a community of other photographers. I don't know if you when you go out and you're shooting, it's a difficult thing to do with non-photographers because it's a lot of standing around and waiting for the right conditions. And, you know, the subtleties of the light and waiting for it to happen can be quite tedious for people who don't have a camera in their hand. So 100%. It was really cool to go there with other people that, you know, have the same passion and just go out shooting with them. And you don't feel like you're rushing anyone or hurrying anyone, and everyone gets it. And that was such a great thing, and made some good friends out of it too.
100%.
Can't be overlooked. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So, let's just kind of segue into the gear you shoot then. Cause you know, we talked about how you got started. I mean, you can see from your website, it looks like you enjoy the night sky, astro and, landscapes. Seeing some gorgeous stuff here. Tell us a little bit about the gear you shoot.
Well, I started out, my very first camera was a Pentax K1000 and didn't last too long with that. Kids were young and didn't have any money for gear and things, but eventually moved, and sorry, Joe, you might want to plug your ears, to Nikon.
Bad word.
I know. I'm sorry. Anyways, I bought a D7200, I believe it was, and shot that. That was kind of what I learned on a little crop sensor camera. Served me well, taught me the basics, and then moved from there to the D850. Nikon's D850 and
solid camera. Wow.
Solid camera, great camera.
You did betcha.
Everything that I wanted it to do. But when the mirrorless started coming out, you know, the benefits of going to the mirrorless were huge for me. So I started looking around at different cameras, and you know, Nikon being a little behind the game with the going to mirrorless. I started, you know, getting intrigued by the Fuji system and the Canon. I looked at Canon as well. And then when the GFX 100 came out and the 100S came out, and some of the people that I followed on online started using them and raving about them, I started getting very serious about that. And so I went to Light Chasers, and of course they, Fuji was one of the main sponsors, and they brought all their gear with them so you could try it out in the field. And of course I signed up, and that Light Chasers conference became a very expensive weekend. I remember calling my wife on the way home saying, "We're selling everything." So we went downstairs and purged the gym system that had been sitting there, not getting used. Managed to scrounge up enough money to buy the body and a couple lenses. And I'll tell you, it's been quite an amazing experience. That camera, you know, I still believe that you don't need a good camera to take a nice picture, but that camera sure helps. That's for sure. And especially for landscape.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I ended up, I was doing the same thing. I used Canon for years, and then I do a lot of videos. So Canon wasn't really ready on the video side, on the mirrorless side, to my standards at the time. So I switched to Fuji as well. So I had the X-T3 and the X-T4 for a number of years. X-T4, obviously not as long, because it was newer at the time. And now the X-T5's come out as well. But just almost 6 months before Light Chasers, I ended up jumping back to Canon. So I didn't try the 100S at the conference because I didn't want to get excited and have to jump back again. So obviously it would have been another expensive weekend like yours.
But you know, Chris, you went to the R5, is that correct?
Yeah, I actually used the R5 and the R5C.
And so, I mean, for your style of photography, though, that's exactly what you guys, and I know, Joe, you shoot the R5 as well. Wildlife camera. I mean, and you know, not being into wildlife as much, I mean, I do enjoy it, but living where we live, it's not as easy to go out and find the animals. It's such an urban setting, you know, and I, every camera has its you know, is better for different things. And you know, for what I'm shooting, I don't know if there's a better camera on the market for the landscape stuff.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, the other reason I switched back was for the video on the Canon side, because I shoot 8K when I'm in the field for wildlife and nature as well. But yeah, the other thing I was struggling with was the length of lenses. I mean, they had a 200, the X series, they had a 200 f2, which was nice. But I actually was using my adapter and going back to my Canon lenses.
Oh, right. Okay.
So that's what I was using rather than, because there just wasn't enough. Have they improved that? Are there any longer lenses at this point, or is it still more of a landscape type system?
For the X system, there is I believe they have a 100 to 400.
Okay.
They may have a 500 as well, but none of the prime.
Okay, yeah,
don't quote me on that.
Right
But with the GFX system, it's limited at this point. It's okay. Still pretty new, and that was one of the gambles that I took. They don't have a lot of fast lenses, which is important to me for the Astro. I just actually purchased a 45 millimeter, which comes out to 35 millimeter. And when you do the conversion, but it's a 2.8. So I'm looking forward to getting into some night sky stuff and trying that lens out, because there's nothing that's really wide and fast. F4 is where a lot of them sit. I have taken some nice Astro at the F4, but I would like that extra stop of light just to, you know, get better images. So I'm hoping that this 2.8 will do the trick.
What about any of the aftermarket lenses? Like, I know, I think it's Rokinon.
Yeah.
Is that one of them? They make some... I know Shane swears by the one lens. I'm not sure if it's a 1.2 or a 1.4. And it's, you know, I think it's got a mechanical aperture ring, you know, all this kind of stuff. But I mean, for Astro stuff, I mean, the thing is insane. Absolutely tack sharp and super fast, right?
Because of the size of the sensor, there's not a lot of third-party lenses yet.
Okay.
I'm hoping that is going to become the case. I did read somewhere that I think it's Leowa has a.
That's right.
Yeah, and they're kind of, you know, it's completely manual lens, which isn't a big deal. But I haven't seen a lot of reviews on it. So, you know, the GFX system, though, those lenses are just tack sharp. I've never seen anything like it. So I'm holding my breath for something fast and wide to come out. They have a couple 1.7 lenses, but they're just a little too telephoto for the Astro stuff. So hopefully in time, they'll expand that series of lenses and we'll get something that works for me.
So for everybody who's watching, that's a medium format camera, correct? The 100S?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So it's 102 megapixel camera. It's insane.
Wow.
I've taken a shot of a tree from about 200 meters and you zoom in and you can see individual leaves on the tree. It's actually quite insane. I'll send you guys some raw images and you can just take a look.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
Honestly. So maybe the longer lenses aren't even required, you know, for.
Well, and that's a thing, you can crop so much with that 102 megapixels that you don't necessarily need to have the longer lenses. The 200 is the long, or sorry, they have a 250, which I don't own, but it's a 250 prime you know, someday I may look at purchasing. But really, with the 200 that I have a 100 to 200 that, you know, you can crop so hard on it that and still get a great image out of it. So
have you had to upgrade your computer? Can your system handle it, or you haven't had any issues?
That was my other concern. That's why I like doing the test drive when we were in Pincher Creek there. And because I took the files home with me and they all worked totally fine. It's a little bit slower, honestly, but it's not a big deal. It's worth the wait.
Nice. Yeah, for sure.
Well, that's the thing. When I went up to the R5, I had to, my MacBook was a 2014 anyway. Yeah. So, I mean, it needed an upgrade because it was just chugging along. Yeah. Right. So a lot of people don't understand when you move, okay, I'm going to buy a new camera. Well, it's the investment's not just in that camera. A lot of times it's in computers. It's faster external drives. It's faster, you know,
North CF storage, Express, storage, CF
cards. Yeah. Oh, it's insane. So there is it is a huge investment, especially when you're going from something a little bit older in technology and you're making that big jump, right? So,
but you know, it makes such a big difference in the final product and just the usability of the cameras now. They're so good. They're so good.
And I think while Adam uses Fuji, right? I think Thomas Heaton, he uses Fuji too, right?
Thomas just went back to Nikon. I see him shooting a Z7.
Did he really? Eh?
Yeah.
He might. Yeah, Z7 II, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, Z7 II.
He's got a different camera every. It seems like he's got a different camera
every time. Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice because. Well, and that's the thing. He's not married to a certain camera and he's not sponsored. And no, I think in one of his videos, he stated that fact that he wants to shoot what he wants to shoot. And so if something changes and he feels like, okay, now Canon is better suited for me, I'll go to Canon or, you know, back to Fuji. And you know, he's shooting Hasselblads as far as, you know, the film cameras go and the X-Pan and all this kind of stuff. So I think he likes the idea that he's not tied to one system, right? So, and I think he's made that pretty clear in his videos. So.
Yeah, and I respect that. You know, like I said earlier, every camera has a different genre that it's really, that it excels at. And, you know, if you want to go out and try different cameras for different reasons, I think that's fantastic. I wish I had the money to do that. That's all.
Yeah, no kidding. So does the 100S shoot video?
It does.
Okay.
It'll shoot 4K. And it's decent. It's not, I don't think, they have the new H2S, the XH2S. Which I think is sort of their premier video camera, which will shoot 8K.
That's right.
So this, but it'll do the trick. Okay. You know,
In a pinch, you're okay. You're going to get some good quality video out of that. Yeah.
Are you shooting more video, Brett?
You know, it's one of those things. It was funny that you say that because Monica and I were chatting a couple weeks ago, and I was asking her some questions about polar alignment because we're talking about maybe doing something when we're in pincher together. Just looking at different ways to polar align if you can't see the North Star. And she was like, you know, we said, well, she suggested, let's make a video of it. And she said, but I don't do video. And I said, well, I'll leave it to me, you know. And so I'm going to have to learn here pretty quick. So, Chris, I may have some questions for you anyway.
You bet, anytime.
Yeah. Well, let's say January, February, March, April. Yeah, you got about a good 3 months to learn that, right? Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is because, you know, the way social media is moving forward and algorithms and, you know, gaining a solid following, you know, it seems to be, you know, shorts and reels and that sort of thing. And I'm still balking at the idea of video, you know, but it seems to be the way to go to, you know, to get ahead on social media. And, you know, it's important. I mean, social media is, you know, it's different for everybody, but when you're trying to amass a following, right? So, you know, you can promote, you know, your prints, you know, for instance, right? Or your teaching or your workshops and that sort of thing. And, you know, you're putting up good quality photos and you're getting nothing.
Yeah.
And then you put up a reel or a short and you get hundreds of thousands of views. It just boggles my mind.
Like a silly reel at that, right? Like just a stupid thing.
I plan on having someone get injured in every one of the videos that I do so that it draws more attention.
Yeah, no.
It seems, but the more asinine the video, the better it does. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And the whole social media thing I find very frustrating. Mm-hmm. I used to really worry about likes and follows and all that kind of stuff. And I found that it was kind of getting in the way of the enjoyment of everything. And so now, you know, I just kind of decided I'm just going to post images when I post images. I try to do one a week and, you know, and this kind of thing. And because that's what at the time, that's what the algorithm said you needed to do. And I just decided, you know, I'm not going to. And when I was doing that, and the algorithm was in my favor, I really shot up. I ended up with almost 4,000 viewers and followers. And, you know, I just kind of got tired of tired of playing that game. But with that said, the shorts and everything, I don't watch them a lot myself, but if I was to do anything with it, I think I'd go with the time lapse.
Oh, time lapse, yeah.
Just create some time lapses that are, I love watching them myself. And they're nice and short. They're about the same, you know, they're laborious, they're time consuming to make. But they're, you know, I think that if I was to go anyway, that's how I would do it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'd be successful, but it would still be true to my creative nature. And that's what I would like doing.
So when you talk about time lapses, are you talking about like night sky time lapses, that type of thing, or just anything like scenic?
Yeah, nighttime, I think it would be, again, that's a tough thing here in the Lower Mainland. I mean, we get so much cloud here that you have to get away from the Lower Mainland if you're going to do anything worthwhile. Fortunately, we have Manning Park that's close by, and they have a dark sky preserve there. So you can actually get some really nice night skies, and it tends to be a little drier up there. You're on the other side of the mountain range, so it's clearer skies. But you struggle with foregrounds and different things. You guys on the prairies, you guys don't know how lucky you have it when it comes to that. I'll take my temperate winters. I'll give you that.
Yeah. When it's minus 30, I don't know if I'd rather be here or there. But
That's what I say. I'll take the temperate winters. But I'll tell you, in terms of the weather, you guys really have it made up there for photography. It's beautiful.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, especially heading east. I mean, the mountains are fabulous, but even heading east, you start getting into the prairies and you got grain silos and barns and even fences and like just everything that you can want as a landscape photographer right there.
Last two summers, I've got a lot of family in Saskatchewan and North Battleford area.
So, oh, there you go. Yeah.
There's some photographers that I'd seen online and, taking pictures of these old barns and buildings that are all kind of falling apart and dilapidated. Mm-hmm. Having parents that grew up there, they talked so fondly of the prairies when they were younger. And so I really felt a calling to get back there myself. And so I spent the last two summers, I spent a week just driving through there and taking pictures of the, you know, different buildings I loved it there. It was absolutely beautiful. A lot of people talk negatively about the prairies. You know, it's flat, it's this, it's that. I'll tell you, there's beauty everywhere if you just take the time to find it.
Oh, for sure.
And absolutely. If you're into the minimalist type of photography too, I mean, you couldn't ask for anything better than the prairies, to be honest, you know, with the big skies and 100%.
Guys, and those storms you guys have rolling through there. When we saw Beth at the chasers talking about her storm chasing, I'll tell you that blew my mind that people would do that all summer long. And I thought, she's a teacher as well. And I thought, man, I could see myself doing that for a summer. I'll tell you.
For sure. Exactly.
There's lots to chase. That's for sure.
That time of year. So beautiful and powerful.
So your favorite season to shoot then? Does it coincide with, I'm not a night photographer or an astrophotographer, but does it coincide with more of what's going on, you know, up high than it is, like whether it's winter or summer? Is it more like Milky Way-ish time of the year, or is it Milky Way season, or is it that sort of thing, or are you...
I like the fall for the colors, but certainly the spring is a great time for the astrophotography. Just where the Milky Way lies in the sky, you can get the full arc of it, the panoramas, which is really nice. Something that I haven't done a lot of, honestly. I plan on doing that more this spring. We're heading down to the Oregon coast. Where they have sea stacks and everything. So that's my hope for the spring. Clear skies, if they present themselves, that's going to be amazing. In terms of a favorite season, though, I would say I love shooting in any season. Winter here is a little painful because it's raining so much. And, you know, getting out in the rain and slogging around isn't my favorite. I'm a bit of a fair weather photographer, I'll admit. But, you know, I don't know if I necessarily have a favorite season. I like them all for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And I just adapt my style of photography to what the conditions present.
So cool. did you learn about the night sky as you were learning astrophotography, or did you have an interest in that before you got into that?
I'm not a huge astronomy guy, honestly.
Okay.
But weather has always been something that's really fascinated me. It's honestly, I watching different people online and following Monica, for example, and just seeing their work, it intrigued me. And I'm not a huge night sky. Like, I don't know where all the planets are. I don't know, you know, any of that. Mm-hmm. But I find it absolutely beautiful. And using it as a background to an old building or a barn or a fence, you know, whatever it is, an old car, whatever you've got as a foreground, I find it just such a beautiful backdrop. One of the pictures that I have of the lighthouse, you know, that part of Euclid is notoriously bad for clouds. When we happened to be there, the Milky Way was right above it, and it just made for such a perfect backdrop to a beautiful old lighthouse sitting there on the Pacific Ocean. That it was just beautiful. I just loved it. So working it in, I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan of astronomy for that, but the beauty of the night sky is fantastic.
That's insane. That's a great shot. I mean, we'll bring it up, Chris, as as one of your the video editing. What would you call that? An overlay or?
Sure. We'll show it to everybody.
I'm the video guy. So, we'll call it overlay or something.
Yeah. You're the video guy. All right.
No, I was just looking at the image. It's called Celestial Navigation. That's what is that? Is it stacked?
It was 16 images stacked and then put into Sequiter for noise reduction.
Yeah.
And then obviously edited in Lightroom and Photoshop.
Yeah.
And then I did load up the lighthouse as well. With my wife was running around on the rocks with the big light.
Oh, I was just going to ask that. Sweet. Okay.
Yeah. She was a good sport on that one.
So I see in some of your buildings, like the abandoned buildings and all that and whatnot, do you put light in there beforehand, or did you run around, or like how? I was kind of going to ask that same question.
There's a gentleman down in Australia. His name is Richard Taddy, who he calls himself the night sky landscape. I think it's there. So night, I should know it. But anyways, I'm watching a lot of his videos. I learned a lot from him just taking lights and basically taking what I do is I'll take a light into the building, set it up on a tripod, run out, take a shot, go back inside, move it, move the light, go back out, take another shot. And then you can blend them in Photoshop with the light and blend mode.
Sure.
And combine them all that way. And it just takes out, I don't know if you're familiar with that blend mode, but it will basically take all the lightest areas of each of the image and blend them into one. And that's sort of the process that I use for my lighting up the insides of the buildings.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I do a lot of real estate photography too. So I flash here and there and then blend it together. So it's kind of similar but different, right? So
I don't use a flash actually. I just use just a light on a tripod. Cube is a company that you can adjust the temperature and everything of the lights, and they've worked really well for me.
Nice. Yeah, I know those are neat devices for sure.
Yeah, no, just taking a look at that one, the one building.
Is that the old haunted house?
The little schoolhouse on the prairie.
Oh, yeah.
That's
an Oyen, Alberta.
I know Oyen. Oh, okay.
Oyen. Wow. Yeah, that was a funny story. I got into Oyen, and all I had was a picture of that barn, the schoolhouse. And I wanted to find where it was. So I got into my hotel, and I asked the lady, I said, you know what, I'm looking for this old schoolhouse. Apparently it's somewhere around here. And she takes a look at it and she says, let me go get Gus. He knows everything around here. So, you know, all of a sudden, just like a sitcom, Gus happens to walk through the door and, this gentleman here is looking for this old house or this old schoolhouse. And So he looks at the picture and he says, do you know where it is? And I kind of gave him a rough idea. He says, oh, I got a cousin that lives out over that way. Let me give him a call. So the next thing you know, he's talking on the phone. He's, you know, I'm talking to my cousin Bill. He says, this guy talks forever. Just, you know, and, hey, Bill, I've got a guy here. He wants to come out and see your old schoolhouse. No, the kids are good. This went on for like 15 minutes, you know.
Nice.
And eventually I managed to get permission to go onto this guy's property and take the pictures. So, nice. That was a really cool one. The gentleman who owned the land just said, you know, just be careful you don't light any fires. That was obviously his big concern, and I assured him that the lights I use don't give off any heat or anything like that. So spent about an hour out there taking pictures. That was a really fun night. A fun evening for sure. Earlier that night I'd actually got into a big thunderstorm just out of Kindersley, and ended up chasing that all over the place, taking pictures. I think there's a lightning picture that was taken from that that evening as well.
Purple rain.
That's yes. The one. Purple rain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
And so that was taken earlier in the night, and then I drove from there. I don't know where I ended up. Somewhere in Saskatchewan, and down some gravel road. Again, a fun story that night. Out there taking pictures on the side of this old, you know, just one of these range roads. And this truck just goes flying past me. And, you know, normally they would slow down but it was dark, it's stormy. And, you know, so anyways, I got sprayed with a bit of gravel. And, you know, I just kind of thought, oh, you know, whatever. The guy probably didn't see me or whatever. And all of a sudden, about 200 meters down the road, the truck comes to a stop. And then it starts backing up. And of course, I've got thousands of dollars worth of gear on me. I'm in the middle of nowhere. You know, there's no cell service. And I'm thinking, oh, here we go. Like, what's going to happen now, right? And so the guy backs up and window rolls down. And I'm thinking I'm going to get the third degree for being out on the road, you know, and, you know, not being visible enough. Well, this guy couldn't have been a nicer fella and apologized for passing so fast. He's, I didn't see you there. Are you broken down? Can I help out anyway? And, you know, on and on. And, you know, I said, no, I'm good. No problem at all. You know, just out here taking pictures of the storm. And this led to a big, you know, again, 20 minute conversation, chatting with his kids in the back.
Nice.
And, yeah. You know, it spoke to the prairie mentality and the prairie hospitality of these people who will, you know, this guy, he could have just kept going. He didn't know who I was, but here he is, you know, making sure I'm okay. And, you know, chatting, you know, it left me with such a nice feeling. And I felt so guilty for thinking that this guy was going to be mad at me, you know, and
right.
Yeah.
A jerk. But, you know, it was just such a nice experience to be out there and just know that there was people out there looking out for you. And
awesome.
It just reminded me of my own family, who are very close and friendly and help anyone, you know, so it was cool.
That is awesome. That's awesome. I have to ask you about the trick or treat. You mentioned the haunted house. Tell us a little bit about this one here, because it looks like you got the moon in the shot too, or was that?
Yeah. Okay. Well, full disclosure, that is a composite. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I did. That moon was out that night, but it was just kind of off to the left hand side of me, so I did pull it over a little.
Oh yeah. Bit, yeah.
That is an old house down in Shaunavon, just out of Shaunavon, known as the Witch's Hat. And it is such a cool old building. And that's actually one of the reasons that I, two summers ago, I saw a picture of that and found the photographer who had taken it, a gentleman by the name of Chris Attrell.
Chris. Oh, yeah.
Chris, you know Chris? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I chatted him up on Instagram, and he agreed to take me out. So I drove out there and spent the evening with him. He took me around to a bunch of these old farmhouses and barns and different things and gave me a bunch of suggestions, places nice. To go and see. And that was sort of my first introduction to the prairies. And what a wonderful way to spend a week just driving around to the little towns and taking pictures here and there. It was wonderful.
That's a testament amazing. To the photographic community, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then to top that off at Pincher Creek, you know, a couple months later, this year, it was, you know, I've fallen in love with the prairies.
Wow, that's awesome. Some great images here. I'm sure Chris will be putting those up
for
everyone to see. Well, I mean, along with your website address and everything, but we're just taking a look at some of these photos here. So resilience. I see that's a very a popular spot, right? That's a very, and I've seen a few of the guys like Adam and
Gavin goes out there quite a
Gavin,
he was living out here.
And trying to get different perspectives, trying to photograph it differently, right? But
well, that shot there, that's just in a little called Fairy Lake, just out of Port Renfrew on Vancouver Island. And it's a very iconic tree. Probably I've heard it referred to as the most photographed tree on the Instagram. You know, people kind of smirk when they show the picture, but it was funny that the day we took that, this just goes speaks to the photographer's brain. A buddy of mine who lives in Victoria, he decided he was going to come with me that day, so he jumped in the car and we drove. It's about a 2.5 hour drive from Victoria, so we got out, drove all this way. It's a beautiful drive, but finally get out there and we jump out of the car and, you know, the tree is kind of sitting on this log in the middle of a lake. And my buddy says, so what are we here to shoot? And I said, well, that tree right there. He says, which one? And I said, the one growing out of the log in the middle of the lake. That? I said, yeah. He says, I don't get you photography guys. And so we spent our time taking the pictures and everything, I edited it and I sent it to him and I says, that's why I went out there. And he goes, well, that was probably worth it. He says, that's a nice picture.
Too
funny.
It was funny, that picture. I took that and put it on Instagram, and all of a sudden everyone started saying, oh, you can see a heart in the picture. And of course completely escaped me, you know, and of course, I took it that way.
I'm sure that's happened to everybody at one point where they, you know, somebody sees something different that you haven't saw, and it's like, I did that. Yeah. Just so
that's totally all in the plan. On purpose. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I see a guitar. You teach. I just like, is photography your biggest hobby, or is there other things outside of photography that you do? Or
when you have time. I teach behavior. I work in a behavior room in a middle school, so I work with disadvantaged youth who are just kind of skirting the law and trying, you know, lots of family trauma and problems at home. So that's, you know, something that I've done for pretty much my whole life. I was in the classroom for a lot of years, but always kind of gravitated to those kids and trying to help them out. That honestly is a pretty stressful position. You see a lot of stuff that is hard to take in, but so you need some releases. And so photography is a big one. I do love the guitar. I've played since I was about 9 years old. Maybe the best gift I ever got was when my parents got me a little acoustic guitar for my ninth birthday. And I play and sing and have played in a few little, teacher bands and things and done presentations at school. So, yeah, the arts have always been sort of, in my life. I can't draw to save your soul. I wish I could. But, music and now photography. Photography has trumped all of that, though. It's something that I just absolutely love doing. And the guitar is there and I strum along and play with songs and things but the photography is where it's at.
So do you see yourself down the road moving more full time into photography, or?
I do work with a gentleman by the name of Ted Carlsar, who runs Omni Largesse Photography out in Abbotsford, which is about a half hour drive from where I live. He's the gentleman that I took lessons from originally. And we just kind of hit it off. And when my photography started getting better, I would stop in and chat with him every once in a while. And I asked him one time, you know, I was interested in the tour side of things. And we chatted a little bit about that and agreed to kind of try and build that into his business. So he focuses mainly on, teaching photography basics and portrait photography, and does a lot of landscape as well. But the tour stuff, COVID really hit him hard, many people. It was something that he'd kind of gotten away from. And so when he had the offer to have some help with it, he jumped at it. So I was fortunate for that. Now, in terms of moving into this full time, I love getting out and taking pictures. It's certainly something that I want to continue doing. And you need to fund it somehow. So, yeah, moving into doing the photography more on a full-time basis is something that I'm certainly considering. But there's a part of me that fears that will take away from the excitement and the enjoyment of it, too. I don't ever want to have to worry about, getting enough people for a tour to put food on the table, for example.
For sure.
I enjoy going out and shooting, and I don't want anything to destroy that. So, I will certainly do this for the time being, and we'll continue doing the tours and the teaching and that sort of thing. But if it starts to erode away my enjoyment of taking pictures and photography, then I probably would walk away from it, because I don't want anything to jeopardize that.
And that's pretty common with a lot of hobbies. A lot of people want to keep their hobbies for the sheer enjoyment of it. And, they don't want it to get to the point where it becomes work, right? Yeah. It's one, I could totally relate to that.
Yeah.
Because I've done this a few times full time back in Ontario and that sort of thing too. And, certain points in my career, it was a grind. Yeah. It was a real grind. It really, took away from the enjoyment of it. You're doing so, back then I was a wedding portrait photographer and, you're doing summers full, sometimes two or three weddings in a weekend.
Yeah.
And, it certainly took away from, I shouldn't say the enjoyment of it, but it was work. It was actually, work. And then when I got out of the wedding photography business of about 20 years, I guess I could say I started to enjoy it a little more again.
Yeah. And I look at what you guys do, and that's something that intrigues me. You guys are having a blast at it. You can tell just mm-hmm. by listening to you guys talk and everything that you guys do, your social media posts, the bloopers, the web, the podcasts, that would be enjoy. That if I can keep that joy and keep doing this, then absolutely, I see no problem. Mm-hmm. So as long as I'm still having fun, absolutely, let's go for it. But if it becomes a chore, I would back away from it. I don't want to destroy the hobby. It's too much fun.
That's the number one thing we said when we started, Joe.
Well, 100%. I was going to say that the minute it stops being fun, we're done.
Yeah.
How are you guys enjoying the podcast side of it? I'm curious.
It's a blast.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun. I wish we could do it a lot more. I end up getting super busy with my work and whatnot. And Joe's busy too at times, but the more we enjoy it. Even just talking to you and hearing your story and all that, we love it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
If we could put out a video a week, we would.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But we've got other other work and that sort of thing. So it's but when we get the I guess if we had the time, we would just do it all the time.
Oh, 100%.
What it boils down to, because we never not have fun doing it.
Yes.
I mean, our blooper reels are, oh my God, we could probably do Ooh, I don't even want to say.
We might be able to do full time video bloopers.
That's right. Oh, it's just, and if you can't laugh and have fun, and that's why we leave a lot of it in too, because it's real, right? You know, we're not trying to be this super professional. We're trying to be as professional as we can, but at the same time, Well, quality wise, I mean.
Oh, okay. Quality,
Yeah. But you know, it's what it is, and like Chris and I said before, we don't want to not be ourselves, right? So if you know, if we mess up and this and that, like we'll review the video. Just leave it in. Who cares? Just leave it in there. No sense cutting it out. You know, people will see that, you know, you mess up or you're having fun. And honestly, I don't think anybody really cares.
No one cares. At the end of the day, it makes you look authentic and real. So, you know, I've watched all of your podcasts now and, in preparation for this. So, you know, I love them all. So, you know,
I appreciate
that. That's great to hear. Thanks.
Enjoyable to watch. So that was fantastic. Glad to be a part of this.
That's awesome. Great.
So Brett, with the workshops, you have anything upcoming on the horizon that we can direct people to have a look at your website for? Or
yeah, actually, we're just coming up with a bunch of new workshops that should be put online here in the next couple weeks. So we've got some exciting night photography workshops that we're going to be doing. Also going into Stanley Park and doing some cityscape shots
of
night lights. Spent some time in Gastown. Those have been very popular for us. And we're also looking at getting over to Euclulit at some point in the fall and doing some work on the ocean and the beautiful lighthouse that's out there and also up to Tofino in that area. So, yeah, there's lots on the go. Just come over to the website and take a look at what we've got. As I said, they should be up in the next couple of weeks or so.
That's great. Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll have a link to the website and directly to the workshops there in the description below for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Thank you.
So, I mean, we had this other question like we have here. We're going to ask about, you know, how do you keep improving on your photography and everything? But I think you kind of answered that at the beginning. And it's pretty much the same way you got into photography. It's pretty much YouTube, hands-on, other photographers, you know, books, that sort of thing.
And you know what I would add to that actually, though, is things like light chasers. I mean, you can spend a lot of time watching videos and practicing in the field and watching YouTube. But I think the one thing that improved my photography the most was going to light chasers and meeting people like yourself, Joe, and Monica and Victoria again, like I mentioned earlier. And then that critique, I went in there maybe a little overconfident that my images were going to stand out. And it was fantastic to see so many other great photographers there with outstanding work. I think Jamie Chin was the one who won the overall award there. And his pictures were outstanding. And it really kind of showed me what needed to be done, what I needed to do to get better. And it's really not settling on something if it isn't perfect. And that was a huge lesson to learn. So getting around other photographers, seeing what they're doing, chatting with other people, that no book can do that for you. No YouTube
video
can do that for you. It's being around other great photographers and learning from them and seeing what they do. After Light Chasers, I went out and spent an evening with Monica out in the Rockies. And what an amazing experience. Also did the same thing with Victoria out in Salmon Arm where she lives. And just watching them do their thing, you can learn so much from watching accomplished photographers, just, you know, how they set up, how they find their compositions, the settings they use. And then with Victoria, I did a post-processing session with her afterwards and, you know, watched how she would approach the scene. And then I showed her what I'd done and she gave me feedback and different things. And what a great way to learn. So that's what I intend to do to get better, is spend more time with quality photographers and learning from them and seeing those tricks that they use and forging some friendships in the process.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you brought that forward, because building a solid network of friends/photographers, you know, people you can go out with and learn from each other and try different things is very important to improving your photography. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's why Chris hangs out with me.
Well, Chris, it's funny.
I've noticed a real increase in a real improvement in Chris's work since he started.
Nice. How I moved from photography to video just to get away from that.
tired of competing. Yeah,
that's right. But seriously, I mean, it's funny. We were talking about this. The fact I still go to Joe's workshop because I still learn something every time I go, even though I'm experienced, and it's like 3 or 4 days. Just dealing or talking with other people, like-minded individuals, yeah. Learning about photography. That's all you're doing, because you can go out on a hike with your family or whatever, and you're like you brought it up at the beginning, Brad. You stop and take a photo or whatever, and yeah, they're already gone. Yeah, I'll be there in a second, and now you're rushed. But yeah. Everybody's mm-hmm. thinking the same exact thing, trying to get the same concept mm-hmm. and shots and understanding, and it's just awesome spending all that time with like-minded individuals.
Well, the great thing about the workshop environment too is it's not always on the workshop leader. I mean, photographers are talking amongst themselves too and asking questions yeah. and everything else. And the one workshop I had in Waterton, I had a couple of gentlemen there that, speaking up when, you know, some of the other ones had questions because they knew the answers. Right. So it was awesome. Like you're saying, oh no, well, this is how we would do it and everything. And we did it like this last time and maybe try this. And I'm just sitting back. I'm like, this is wild, because yeah. they're excited about sharing their knowledge now, yeah. you know, and absolutely. They've been on a few of my workshops, but you know, they had learned from it. And then now they're telling the other participants. I'm like, this is cool. I'm going to just sit here and have my beer and yeah. Go ahead, guys. You know, like it was all joking aside. It was really cool to see, like, yeah. you know, that they did take stuff away that they really wanted to share, you yeah. know, and that sort of thing. Right. So well, yeah, it's
everyone's learning from everyone else.
That's the biggest point right there. 100%. Yeah. So
another thing that I've done in order to help myself is I will find pictures on Instagram or wherever of places that are familiar to me or close by, mm-hmm. Images that I like and that I, you know, and then I'll go out and try to recreate those images. And some people say, well, you know, you shouldn't take the picture that someone else has taken. And I kind of take an exception to that. And I think that there's a lot to be learned of Adam Gibbs lives, has spent time in a park that's about 5 minutes down the road from me. So finding his images and then finding the locations that he went to and trying to recreate that image myself, I think there's a lot of learning to that. Mm-hmm. Your camera settings and then, you know, getting the image, taking it back into Lightroom and Photoshop and then trying to recreate that. You learn along the way how a professional does it. That has been something that has really worked to my advantage. And then, of course, doing your own thing, of course, that's important as well. But, if you can recreate an image the way an Adam Gibbs or a Victoria Hack or a Joe Desjardins mm-hmm. Does it, then you know, you're onto something, in my opinion. At least you have that skill set. You have those tools in your toolkit then for when you get something unique of your own that you can apply those tools to.
That's a great way to look at it. Try and recreate and then put your own spin on it.
That's right.
You know,
form your own identity.
Yeah, that's right. Do your own thing, right? It's a great way to approach that. Absolutely. So,
yeah.
No, wow, that's great. I mean, we're just flying through these, Brett. I mean, you're way too efficient in answering our questions.
I answer 1,000 questions a day.
No kidding, right? Yeah, yeah. So challenges. What would you say your biggest challenge right now is with photography?
Time.
Okay.
I want to get out more. Mm-hmm. I want to get out to different places. I think one of the things that interests me the most about photography is getting to these little locations that you never, ever would have gone to had you not been into photography. The places that I've explored around the province and around the country now, I know I never would have gone to those places, but it takes time to get there. And, you know, I don't mind sleeping, you know, in the car if that's what it takes, but I just need more time. So that's the biggest challenge for me.
You're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. The learning side of it comes relatively easy to me because I'm passionate about it. And I've always been one of those types of people that if I'm really, you know, if I enjoy what I'm learning, it comes very quickly. You know, the composition side of things is a challenge. The technical side of things was easier for me to wrap my head around. But again, you know, looking for inspiration and then going out and, you know, whether that's online or wherever you're going to find the inspiration, but then just getting out and having the time to go and shoot. I wish I had more.
Well, there's one thing about composition is you'll never stop learning. You know, I was a very technical guy also in the beginning, learning photography, the technical side, lighting, all that kind of stuff came very easy to me. Yeah. But at the same time, you looked at my imagery and I'm just like, whoa, that's bad.
Yeah.
It was lit perfectly. The settings are correct. But I mean, oh my God, it was just like very static, very boring. I've actually had a few families after I presented the photos kind of said, you know, we just look way too stiff. Right? We don't look natural. But that's kind of like that perfectionism too. Like I made sure everybody was straight. Everybody, you know, it was lit well and everything. But composition was just... It took me years. I mean, I'm still learning composition, but at the same time, like, it just took me such a long time to kind of break out of that mold of what I thought was good. And when in fact was absolutely horrible. Yeah. Still learning every day. I look at something and I'm just like, wow, yeah, that's never would have thought of that composition before, yeah. You know, or something like that. So I can totally relate with you there.
But that's one of the great things about social media. And, you know, it has its limitations and it has its frustrations, but man, there's endless amounts of inspiration out there. You know, so I do learn a lot from just looking at other people's work and, you know, learning how they set things up. How they make everything work in the scene. And, so you can learn so much from that as well. So there's resources out there to, you know, to help you out.
I got a question for you here. How did you get involved with Case? I see you're a Case Pro partner in BC.
Yeah. So I got an email or a text rather just out of the blue, I guess, Instagram message on Instagram from a gentleman, Jim Brompton, who is the head of Case Filters Canada. And he just basically said, you know, geez, I really like your work. Interested to chat with you about it. And you know what Instagram's like, you get 1,000 of these sorts of things.
Oh, yeah.
Half of them are bogus, 90% of them are bogus, and you're not sure what to make of it. But so, you know, I checked out his website and it was legit. And so I thought, well, I'll give this guy, you know, I'll respond back. And so, yeah, we got chatting. He lived in Kelowna. And he was interested in, you know, told him my story, told him that I was sort of just starting in the tutorial, you know, the workshops and that sort of thing. And he made the offer to bring me on as a partner. Liked my work enough could tell that I was using filters. I was using Lee filters at the time, but I wasn't happy with them all that much. Pretty serious color cast on the set that I had. And I, you know, they were finicky and hard to put on the lenses and, you know, all the issues that you have with the square filters. I'd seen the Case filters again. I think it was Adam and Thomas had started using them online and was very intrigued. They spoke very highly of them. And so when he made the offer, I was like, absolutely, let's do this. So
Yeah, 100. I could totally relate, and Chris too, about the color cast, especially on those NDs. Because when I first got them sent to me, I did a side by side. I just went up to Elbow Falls there in Bragg Creek, and I did a side by side, with a case and a Lee. And I didn't even have to color correct with the case; it was so neutral. Right.
Yeah.
But that cyan coming from the Lee NDs were just, oh my god. I mean, and don't get me wrong. It's easy enough to correct, pretty much. Yeah. It was one click of the mouse and you know what I mean? With the eyedropper, the white balance tool, it was easy enough to fix, but, just the clarity and neutrality of the, I guess the colors with the case filters just blew me away. And it's like, well, it was a done deal.
And so quick to put on and take off and adjust, and they're lightweight, they're compact. It was a real no-brainer. It was actually after I got involved with Jim, I told him when I signed up for Light Chasers, I said, you need to get in touch with this Shane Turgeon fellow, who I didn't know from a hole in the ground at the time. But I said, give him a shout and see if you can get it, attach yourself to this. And so he did. So I was glad I made that connection, because I think you guys are also case pro partners, are you not?
Yes, we are. Yeah, for Alberta. That's correct. I understand Jim only has maybe two per province.
Okay.
Two or three. Now, those are pro partners. There's different levels and, there's ambassadors. There's different segments to it. We got involved. We love the stuff. Actually, Chris is testing out. You go ahead, Chris. I don't even know what.
I was going to say that on the video side, Case has come out with some new products as well. And the Map Box, the Movie Mate Map Box. I'm just testing it right now, and there'll be a review in the future for that one. But it's kind of changing the video side for me, because I still use filters on the video side as well. And it's a little different because the grad filters, instead of the vertical 4x6 vertical grads, the grads are horizontal, right? Because you're filming 16x9. So there's a bit of a different scenario. But the system, the Case systems, the brains behind those systems, they're cutting edge, because the way that they go on, the way they think, the way that the concepts they've come up with, it's great. I mean, they're beating, to me, in my opinion, and you guys can speak to this too, or if you want, but they're beating all the other filters out there and the concepts, not only the glass, like the Wolverine glass, and the systems, and how they're easy to use.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. They snap on so fast. And when you're dealing with changing light conditions, you need to be quick. And if you're fumbling around, what I always found with the leaf filter systems is that, I'd get them on, and then I'd realize there's a little bit of a light leak, at the top or the bottom. So then you're adjusting a little bit more, and it just became so tedious and frustrating. None of those issues exist with the Case filter system. Mm-hmm. So it was a real easy decision to make for me.
Oh, excellent.
It was an easy decision to move to Case.
Chris, the filters that you're using, are those the one with the colored rings, or is that different?
Like the new system that's come out?
Yeah.
That's the magnetic ones. Those are mostly for photography.
Okay.
The video, Joe and I both use the K9 system. I don't know what system you're using, but Wolverine glass. Yeah. But so actually I'll just grab it here for you.
Yeah. Grab it, Chris, for sure.
Okay. So actually here's my video rig right here. So this is the R5C, but this is the Case Movie Mate system right here. So it's a matte box system. So it's got a, so basically here's the filters. The filters are magnetic. I'm just waiting for a few filters to test. So we'll see this in the future, but they actually just go into the frame here, and they just magnetize on here. So I can put a grad filter in there, an ND filter, anything I need from the video side. The cool part is that they've thought about everything, and the fact that on the inside here, they actually have, and I'll pull it out here. Here's the polarizer filter.
Nice.
But there's an ND attached to it. So here's the polarizer filter. Here's the variable ND attachment. So you actually magnetize them together, and now this becomes a variable ND.
I was going to ask you if they had a variable ND. So that's cool.
Yeah. So then basically all you do is slide it back in here, back in place, and then you're good to go. So it's as easy as, like I said, they just think of everything. So all you got to do is just pull it out and take it out, And then now you don't have the polarizer or ND in it. So it's that simple. And for I don't know if you're familiar with the 180 degree rule on video, but basically it's, you know, you're trying to, when you're shooting 24 frames per second, the concept is to, you want to shoot your, make your shutter speed 1/50th of a second or 1/48th of a second. Yeah. I got to bring the light down for that. So this is where all this comes in handy, right? Right, so, right. And before I was doing that, with the K9 system too, but I mean, on the video side, it's just nice and handy. This is all, they've definitely designed this for video. So yeah. it's So look for a review coming soon on that one. Just waiting for a couple more filters to do some tests, but wow. Yeah.
Is that your R5 attached to that, or is that something different there?
This is actually an R5C attached to that.
Okay. So and that's their cinema. Is it a cinema? Is that what that C stands
for? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's basically what they've done was it's pretty much the R5, except if you can see here, they've added a fan in it.
Cooling vents, yeah.
So I was definitely having issues. For example, I do a lot of real estate videography, so you know, the camera's on for an hour or longer. And I truthfully was having some overheating issues with the R5. If you're just shooting wildlife or just shooting, you know, video here, clips in there, never have an issue. I never have an issue at all. But I was using it to the extreme. And right. Therefore, this, I've never had it overheat whatsoever. Yeah. It does use an excessive amount of battery life, which is why I have the V-mount battery on the back. This is actually, we'll just say, 6 Canon batteries of power. Wow. That's what gives that extra, and it lasts multiple hours, so I don't have to worry about changing them, and they just pops on and off. And okay. So, yeah, so my, as you've seen some of the videos, my rig's changed over time, and now this is basically what I've been going with lately.
That's an impressive rig you got there, Chris. I've got to say, that's impressive.
I'll have this at Light Chaser, so
awesome.
So you'll see it.
Oh, and what are you doing in real estate? Are you doing the photography side of things, or are you a salesman?
No, I basically do the videography. So I do all the real estate video tours. So, you know, I film agents walking through the house saying, here's the kitchen, here's this, this is the changes. And I do all that kind of stuff. Okay. And I do real estate photos at times, but on the real estate side, I'm more on the video guy, becoming the video guy there. I enjoy that a lot more than the photos.
Right.
You know, a lot of the photographers on the real estate side are doing, you know, three bracketed shots here and there. And I'm more of the architectural photographer on the real estate side. So I take a lot longer. I do 5 bracketed shots. I do flash here and there, blend it all together. So mine take a little longer. So I enjoy the video a lot more, but I'll do architectural shoots still as well. So, yeah.
My brother-in-law, who is going to be coming to Light Chasers, is also a real estate photographer.
Oh, neat.
So I'll introduce it to him. He lives in Kelowna. So, yeah.
Oh, nice. Absolutely.
Yeah, again, just wants to kind of get into landscape photography more. So I talked about last time around. And so he's been working at his landscape stuff a little bit more. But he's done well for himself in Kelowna on the real estate side.
Oh, yeah. Kelowna is doing fairly well in the real estate side. Yeah. So I'm sure he's got lots of business there.
Yeah, he does.
Awesome. I got a video question, Chris. You're talking about the variable IDs. I always just assume that you just scrolled the button at the back and lowered your aperture to control the light. Isn't that, you remember you hear all the clicking sound, you know, like, you know, when it comes out super bright and you just go like that and then it brings the light back. Yeah. So what's the problem with doing that? Brett, it's so funny. So we got you got the adapter rings for the Canon, right? So it's so you can use the EF lenses, the RF lenses, right? And then so it has so you can either get them with the built-in variable ND or you don't. And the amount of times Chris and I forget we had them on or we don't have them on, but every time I send Chris a video, all he hears is the scene is super bright and then it goes really dark and all you can hear is like the aperture, right? Just like stopping all the way down here. And so obviously every video has got to be cut that out, right? You know? Yeah. And then we'll have the variable ND on. So we'll adjust it. And well, Chris, you just sent me another picture. He had a Merlin in the backyard and he couldn't figure out why it was so dark.
It's basically the day. Yeah. So my camera wasn't together. I grabbed my 100 to 400, put it on my R5, ran outside, and I'm taking pictures of this Merlin that is in our backyard on the tree. And it's like, why is it at 12,800 in bright daylight? What is going on?
Yeah,
of course, I forgot I had the variable ND on the camera.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just the stupidest thing. You know, you forget.
I spent a whole evening doing astrophotography with my polarizer on the front. So, wondering why I couldn't get any light.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I feel the pain.
But it's funny though, right? Yeah, it's crazy. Like,
we've been using the R5s for what? Year and a half or more, maybe, you know, that kind of thing. They're going on 2 years. And I mean, like yesterday, you forgot. We're still forgetting. It's still an adjustment because, you know, we're not using the RF lenses yet. So it's that adapter that we're kind of getting used to. But
it's also the fact that you just need to slow down, right? Mm-hmm. You're in a rush, you grab it, click, gone. Just put the lens on. Okay. Make sure your settings are correct. Go out there. But you know, in wildlife, it's a little different because the Merlin's going to be gone. Right. So you're a little racing, and I've definitely found that with the R5C and the R5, I've definitely, when I'm out in the field, my R5 is literally wildlife photography. My R5C is the video rig. And then I'm just separating them. Yeah. And it just, you know, as I get older, it's a little easier in your mind.
You know, my brother-in-law, who I'll introduce you two guys to in Pincher Creek there, he shoots the R5 as well. So, you know, you guys can gang up on me and my Fuji. it's a gorgeous camera. And, you know, if I had more money, I'd certainly pick one up. And my brother-in-law has a couple RF lenses now, and he just thinks about it. So, yeah, you guys will be happy when you move into those lenses.
Yeah, I've definitely tested a few RF lenses, which is nice through CPS, right? And they're really nice lenses. There's a 28 to 70, I think, and it's an F2. And there's some nice ones for sure. But it's, you know, when you have a backlog of a whole bunch of lenses that are EF and they still are great glass and they still work fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's just hard spending that
money. It is. It's going to take a while. I have a 500 F4 and there's no way anytime soon I'm getting an RF 500 F4.
But why? I mean, that's a gorgeous lens that you've got there. Yeah. And so, I don't you necessarily need to upgrade.
No, I don't. Unless something eventually goes, like, you know, if the time comes and I have to replace the, you know, the IS motor, like just something like, you know, if things start to go, then sure, that's a consideration for, you know, the next purchase. But like you said, I mean, with those adapters, there's no loss of light sharpness. Well, I mean, it's basically just a tube, right? You know, it's almost like an extension tube, right? You know, and there's no loss of speed in autofocus. That was one of the kind of things I was a little concerned about, especially with wildlife photography, like, you know, the communication between that tube. And I was so impressed. I just like, I don't need an RF lens till I need one, sort of thing, right? All my glasses is still,
good.
Awesome.
Well, even for the elk rut in the fall, I rented a 400 F28 EF and it was amazing. Right. So it's, So,
well, for what you guys are doing, the wildlife stuff, I don't know if there's a better camera on the market than the R5 right now. The Sony, maybe, you know, a couple of years ago was sort of the flagship, but I think the R5 is going to know.
Well, and that's the thing, like you mentioned earlier, like Nikon was behind, Canon was behind. Canon was, I thought, a little bit further behind, you know. I was shooting Lumix, there was Sony, there was, you know, all these people that were, you know, kind of coming out. They're way ahead of the game, the way I saw it. I'm like, what the hell's Canon doing here? You know what I mean?
That's why I went to Fuji.
And then lo and behold, you know, the R5, I'm just like, wow, that was hate to say the cliche kind of word, but the game changer of camera bodies. And I was just like, wow, this is over the top, you know? So
The autofocus on those cameras is just unbelievable.
Oh,
and the animal eye detect is like,
It's
crazy. Well,
It's almost like cheating, right?
So you come from that single autofocus point and you get so used to the joystick on the back and putting it on the subject or the eye or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That kind of control. Now I'm just holding the back button autofocus and the thing snapping to the eye. Like, come on. It's just like, and then to compose, to be able to hold the button and then just compose. And it just stays on the sub. I'm like, oh my God. Like, it's cheating.
Yeah.
It's absolutely cheating.
Totally.
Technology today is just, it's
you know,
and, yeah.
You imagine where it's going to be 5 years from now.
You're just going to go like this.
For sure.
You're going to blink and take the pictures, you know? You well, actually, is it the R3 or the R1? It's autofocus. It's eye control. So wherever you're looking, it's going to focus.
Oh my!
Is that the R3 or the R1?
Well, the R1 doesn't exist yet, so it must be the R3.
It might be the R3. Yeah, I have to look it. Look it up.
I did see that. But you look in the viewfinder, and as you're looking around, it's following your eye and tracking the subject. Yeah.
Yeah. So, right. But you know, people think this is brand new technology, but back in the film days, I had a Canon. I think it was a 6E. And it had, I think, 9 autofocus points. And you had to kind of train the camera, but if you it learned whatever autofocus point you learned at, that was your autofocus point. So even 20 some years ago, they had that technology. But now, I mean, it's absolutely insane. Like, apparently, wherever you look, it locks on and it all focuses for you. I mean, you just basically,
I hope it doesn't become too easy, because there is something to be said about the challenge of it. I will say one of the most enjoyable things about photography for me is getting the shot eventually. And sometimes it's like playing a video game and using a cheat code. The reward is gone. That's one of the things that I think I like about landscape photography, and probably even more so with you guys and your wildlife photography, is when you finally do get that shot, what a sense of reward. When everything comes together, and especially in wildlife photography, so many variables that are beyond your control have to converge all at once to get that shot. And when you finally get it, what a sense of accomplishment. So I do wonder if the cameras get too good, will that sense of accomplishment, will that be stripped away somehow? Or will it still be as great as it is? I don't know.
Well, I can attest to that, because I mean, now, you know, we're shooting 30 frames per second. Capturing that decisive moment is not guaranteed. Let's say kind of pretty much guaranteed, but not quite guaranteed. But I mean, your keeper rate is certainly a lot higher. You know, when we were shooting, 5 frames per second, 7 frames per second, you're trying to time things a little more. You're trying to, anticipate, that kind of thing. Now it's, you can hold your shutter down and as the action's happening, and somewhere in those, 1,000 frames you just got, you should be able to find it. So it is a little cheating, I guess. It is making it a little easier, but at the same time, you still have to understand animal behavior. You still got to be, put yourself in the right place for the backgrounds, the lights, everything else. Right. So, I think even if the cameras become that good that, you're almost, guaranteed a bang on exposure, it's still not going to take away from the fact that, you're looking beyond the animal. Like, one of the things for me for wildlife photography is coming up to a subject and I pretty much see the background first, because there's nothing worse than an absolutely busy or distracting background, no matter how beautiful the subject is, right? So you're constantly putting yourself in the position of background and light, where the light is, right? As far as placement and stuff goes. So I think there'll always kind of be that skill set of seeing, but I think it's getting to the point now where it's pretty hard to get a bad exposure, like about 80-90% of the time. I mean, the cameras are that good, right? Yeah. So
it's definitely helping catch the behavior that you don't see as often, and that it's just happening very quick. You can, at least capture it quicker, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And, in wildlife, I think that's probably imperative that the camera be able to do that, because they are such fleeting glimpses of time that an animal is doing what you want it to do, that if you can't capture it, You know, that would be, it would be very frustrating, I would imagine. Oh,
yeah, you could be waiting days, or you're sitting there for hours on, let's say, an owl or something. You're waiting for that split second, like that decisive moment. And if you just happen to look down at your phone, like it's not, you're gone. Done. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those things, right? So, I mean, look what these cameras have done for Chris's photography.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly brought him to the next level anyway. Wow. I mean,
well, thanks, Joe.
You're very welcome. I mean, and this video stuff.
You can actually shoot video now when you hit the red button.
Hitting the red button. So basically this is how it goes, Brett. I give Chris the camera. He sets it up.
Yeah.
And you just hit the red button. Okay. That's all I got to do. I hit the little red button and I dial down my aperture. Well, I have an ND now, so I should be using it properly to try and get the red exposure. But
Basically when you hit the red button, if you're in photo mode, you hit the red button on the R5, it kicks into custom 3 of the video mode. So the moment he hits that red button, it goes to custom 3 with all the settings set up. So
with all the settings in place. So it's not just like a default, record button, right, Chris?
That's correct.
On a standard camera, you just hit record.
That's right.
Chris has set it up so everything is in place. So what we do with the R5s is we set up our custom settings, C1, C2, C3, that, and we save them. Well, this is a tip we had before, and then we save all our camera settings to an SD card along with the latest firmware, right? So
I'm talking about that.
I even do the same in the real estate side. I have different custom settings than I would in the wildlife or nature side, right? So you can save them independent as well.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's just made things so much faster. And I had a real hard time with that R5 in the fall with it locking up. And so I did a lot of camera resets. And so it was nice to have them saved on the card because with the latest firmware, I was able to do that right away. It only took a few minutes and then I was up and shooting again and then, you know, kind of waited for that kind of stuff to happen. But in the end, it was a defective vertical grip, battery grip. Oh. It wasn't actually the camera.
Oh, well, that's
good. So they had it for a good 6 weeks doing a lot of tests and this and that. And in the end, it was actually the vertical grip. So so I've been trying to blast thousands of images through this camera with the grip now to try and replicate the issue because I don't want it, acting up on me in a few months when
I don't want to see that stuff. I don't want to see that site again, please.
Yeah. You don't want to see
I don't want to see that Joe again.
But, you know, that's the other argument of having a backup, right? So I had my 1D with me too. So I always have backup camera with me, especially when you're on a trip, right?
Yeah. But
man, that was frustrating.
With that 30 frames a second, that must be an electronic shutter?
Correct.
Yeah. Any problems with rolling shutter or...
There's been a couple we've encountered. Hey, Joe, when you're going from frame to frame, there's the odd warping scenario.
Well, it was more prominent on the R7.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. True. On the R7, it was prominent. Now, don't get me wrong. Like if you're going from a DSLR to the R7 is your first mirrorless. Mm-hmm. Great camera. You know what I mean? Like it's awesome. Like, I actually used it in Jasper. I purchased it to test it. Right. Bring it as a backup too. Right. Because it's a crop, I thought, you know, this would be a great camera for, a backup right in the bag. Right. But I did notice that rolling shutter with images, and the fact that, you know, if you're looking at a series of images and you know, you can kind of scroll through pretty fast, you can see them kind of become a little wonky, like skewed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But here's the thing though. If you looked at each individual frame separately and I were to show you one, Brett, chances are you probably wouldn't notice.
Wouldn't notice, but
I agree.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's right. That's right. So, I mean, I think that's the rolling shutter is kind of inevitable with Acris. I think with that kind of
framework. I 100% agree. Sure. No, I 100% agree. I notice the same thing when you're scrolling between them and going from frame to frame really fast, you notice it. But if you're looking at it by itself, if you're really looking or if it depended on what you're shooting, really, like if it was a fence line or something like that or whatever, you might notice it. But most of the time, but you know, it's what we, with the amount of video that we're kind of both doing now, it's kind of imperative to be on electronic shutter because I have so many video clips of Joe's shutter from a year ago. Is unusable audio, right? So it's definitely we tried it a lot this year trying to do electronic shutter a bit.
I don't know how many ruined elk bugle videos we had the previous year, right?
Because yes,
one of us is trying to take video and the other one's going 14 frames per second on their DSLR or something, right? And it's just like all you hear is the bursts in the audio, and it's like oh you know, but. Electronic shutter now, that's one of the beauties of it. And the key when you're working side by side, one's taking video, one's taking photos, it has to be electronic shutter.
I mean, depending on your location. I mean, if you're beside a highway, I'm not going to use the audio anyway, because you can hear the car noise and all that, right? So it really depends on the location. But at the end of the day, you still want to catch that bugle from the bugle from the elk and put it on your reel. It's if there's car noise in the background, it's okay. You still got the bugle, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
for what we use it for at the moment, anyway. So
Chris, what kind of mic are you using on your camera? Is it the Rode or is it what do you?
Yeah, I'm just using the Rode Video Mic Pro. Video Mic NTG.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I'm using right now. I don't have I'd like a longer, like a more direct mic, but this is working good for now.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen the Rode has a, it's kind of a ball looking mic that has, I can't even remember what it's called now, but I think it's the MT if I'm not mistaken, but
okay.
It had really good reviews, I don't know anyone that's ever used it, and I haven't been able to find it in stock anywhere. I don't know if it's a supply chain issue during COVID or what, but yeah.
Well, I've looked at the NTG3 and the NTG5, and they're more unidirectional microphones for getting great distances, and they're just super expensive. And right now, I don't use the audio as much because I'm more looking for the video in most cases. But I do have it just in case, especially for that bugle and that kind of thing. Any of the other ball ones or whatever, anything omnidirectional, it's really recording audio all around. And I just get a little leery about that because the moment you step on grass, you know, even behind your camera, you see everything's going to get picked up. So I try to stay away from that kind of thing. It's a little hard I definitely find a little hard recording audio when you're with a group of 10 or 15 people and you're all shooting the same scene and the audio is useless because everybody's talking and getting excited.
You almost have to be in that unique position, finding something somewhere
on your own.
And then even then, like you said, I was amazed at how much the mics pick up, like amazed. Oh, for sure. Yeah. So, and then looking at a lot of the professional, like Nat Geo kind of stuff, you can tell it's audio has been added, Chris? Like it's been... a lot of it isn't the original stuff, right?
100%. We had the pleasure of out in the Rockies this year in the fall, running into a crew that was actually filming a documentary coming out in the near future, and we had a lot of conversations with them. They were great guys, and they actually had a Red camera, the brand Red, and they had a 75 to 1,000 mil lens, which I believe is, we looked it up, I think it was 75,000 US, but they weren't recording. Yeah. They weren't recording audio at all. They were just capturing video and that's it. And so they go back and then they insert. Right. Now there was another crew that you ran into, Joe, I think as well. Right. And
they were
recording audio.
And I ran into the crew in Waterton, and they had flown this gentleman in from, I think, the UK or something like that to strictly record audio. That's all he was there to do. And he had mics like, you know, those big, looks like a satellite dish. I don't know, you know, with a mic in it, like those kind of, what are those, Chris? Like the
parabolic microphones. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and obviously they have permission from Parks to place microphones in other places and everything else, but he was the best sound guy in the world, I guess. Like, so they brought him over just to record the elk. and what going on, because you know you got everything from bugles, you got you know the elk, the cows, they're chirping, and the cows, and you know all this kind of stuff, right? So, but it was amazing to see that you know they wouldn't even be recording video, but this guy was there recording all the audio he could to, you know, use later. Right. So, yeah.
And there's lots of audio guys that get sent up to Alaska to record just sound, right. That they're just there to literally record sound and they'll use it for documentaries later on. And
interesting.
Yeah. So, but like these days, like stock footage companies, they are literally looking for small clips of video. They're not looking for audio. They're just looking for small clips of video to be used in different, you know, projects over the world. And, yeah. and that's all they're looking for. They'll deal with their own. Sometimes they don't even have audio. They just put music behind it or whatever and that kind of thing. So, but, but it is good to capture certain audio things. I mean, I don't have the mic on when I'm capturing the grizzlies because there's cars whipping by on the road. Yeah. It's just not. Now I have to say Joe caught some pretty cool grizzly munch. It was a grizzly, right? Munching the dandelions. And that was just with
Munchie Bear.
Yeah. So that was cool audio. And that wasn't even a road mic.
That was on an iPhone.
Nice.
But that was Munchie Bear, and that video kind of went viral too, right? And the audio was insane on that.
Yeah.
Totally. I couldn't believe it. Can you? Cool. Yeah. Cause I had a friend of mine, Rob, and I think it was Robin Banff. He had messaged me and asked me, was that the R5 with, you know what I mean? And Mike is like, sorry, it was an iPhone. And that's the audio from the iPhone. It's just like, it was so clear. Right. But yeah.
But that speaks to the technology that are going into these cameras now. There's a lady that I follow from Norway, I think, or Oslo. Oslo, Norway. And she has some beautiful pictures. And I asked her, what camera system are you using? And it was some Samsung phone that she's using. And the color production and it was beautiful stuff. And it really speaks to the quality. I mean, if you're okay with just showing your work on social media, then sometimes a phone is all you need. But, you know, as we know, the second you want to enlarge anything or do anything with it, you obviously need the nicer cameras. But
yeah, I mean, like I couldn't agree more, like as far as, you know, the landscape side of things, you know, things that require a whole lot of depth of field, you know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. Phones are stunning, absolutely stunning, you know, for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, when you get into more specialized like portraits and, you know, shallow depth of field stuff, I mean, they do have the kind of those settings on the phones and some apps and stuff for it. But landscapes, you know, sometimes you can't even tell, you know. Even Peter MacKinnon did a little test, a little commercial shoot with, I forget, it was up, like, let's say it was an R5 and it was like the latest iPhone 14, I think it was.
That's exactly
like
that. What it was. Yeah.
It was. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And side by side, it was a photo of a watch and whatever. And I mean, looking at it online, it was pretty hard to tell like the difference between the two, you know what I mean?
It was even a video comparison he did is like with the 14 as well. And for smaller, you know, devices, it's a no, you know, it's not hard to tell. You can kind of pick out the odd thing if you're a video person, right? But most of the time, but yeah, the moment you get it on a big screen or whatever, it's the same concept. Yeah.
So technology is insane.
Do you guys enjoy the post-processing side of photography, or would you rather be out in the field?
Field.
I spend way too much time nitpicking over every little thing. Same on the video side. Like, I mean, I colorize all my video and stuff like that too. And I'd rather be out shooting, but
I love both sides of it. Fortunately, I love the creative side of stylizing your images and, you know, doing that side of it. Definitely being out in the field though is you know, the better part of it, but I do enjoy behind the computer as well. I know a lot of people just hate it.
I wouldn't say I hate it. I mean, I've gotten a workflow down pretty quick that most of my wildlife images, 30, 40 seconds max, like easily under a minute. And if it's all the same light, you know, shift, click, shift, you know, sync and off I go. But I think that the time involved is the landscape and the night stuff and everything else. And the landscape stuff, you know, I kind of have fun with it. But I mean, when you come back from a week of shooting and you've got like 14,000 images of wildlife and stuff, like I think for the most part, the tedious is sorting and, you know, yes, deleting and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But for myself, I don't think you should have to do a whole lot of work to wildlife images. You know what I mean? Like for actually this one here, the one of the elk here, I mean, I bet you it took me a minute if that to edit because I mean, there's not much there to edit. You know what I mean? You get a good exposure, then it's, you know, color contrast, you know, whatever, whites, darks, or blacks. I mean, you know, it gets pretty quick. But you know, turn that into a landscape image, then yeah, I could see, you know, taking time. Right. And that's one side I'm kind of lacking on is the processing a good quality landscape image, especially with the tools available now. Like I'm sure my landscape images could use a good refresher, you know, a good tune up from what's available now compared to when I, you know, I last edited them. So
what I do love is editing videos though. Like when sitting on the computer, colorizing and culling images and all that kind of stuff. But when I'm taking the video clips that I've created and creating a short film or something like that, and with music and adding sound effects and all that, that's the part that I love.
Do you use Premiere?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've used Adobe products. I'm just like Joe, since they probably were invented, right? Yeah. And Adobe came. Mm-hmm. So I can't see myself moving to Final Cut or Resolve or something like that. I'm so used to all the Adobe and they're so integrated in each other.
For sure.
I do voiceover work. I use the audio editing portions. I'm the Adobe guy, right? So
I'm the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, 100%. So, well, Brett, got one last question for you here. And it says, any last words or thoughts you'd like to share? Put you on the spot.
Yeah, put me on the spot. I should have asked for these ahead of time.
No cheating.
Forget it. No.
Nobody gets the list.
Forget it.
Well, actually, you know what? If somebody, I mean, they could actually listen to the other podcast and kind of get an idea of what we're going to ask. But
I did.
You know.
Yeah, I will. Oh.
That's the teacher in you, though.
It is. Never go unprepared.
Preparation.
Yeah, last question here. I last comments. Just embrace the passion and get out there and get into the field and do what you love doing. There's no better hobby. I think one of the things that resonated with me a lot from Light Chasers was Shane Turgeon's talk on the mental health side of photography.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And I don't think there's anything I've found. I did get into meditation a bit and the mindfulness side of things and just trying to shut the brain off. When you have a high stress job and you're dealing with a lot of stuff, it's really important to be able to turn that your brain off. And in my experience, when I'm out there shooting, you have to be completely focused on your surroundings, on the settings on the camera, on the light, the changing conditions. And so, you know, if you're looking for a hobby that is going to take you outside, get you outside and help you deal with whatever stresses you've got going in your life, I don't know if there's anything better than photography for that, because it's impossible to sit there and think about the problems of the day and take a nice picture. You just have to be so focused. So
you're all in.
Yeah, I'm all
right.
In.
You're all in that process, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's nothing else up there. Like you're just right. So
you're focused.
No, it is. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more, Brett. 100%.
It's one of the only times that I find my brain just completely shuts off. Mm-hmm. Is when I'm out there and just hunting for compositions, and then you find something and you run through where your settings should be and what how you envision this image at the end of the day, trying to get that on the camera. And then the same thing when I'm behind the computer, again, it's just as mindful. You're going through the image, making sure everything's where you want it and stylizing it the way you had, you know, envisioned it in the field. All in all, it's probably been one of the best things I've ever done for my mental health. So
excellent.
Awesome.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, great answer. Great way to end the podcast. Absolute pleasure, Brett, having you on. Great conversations. Looking forward to seeing you down in Light Chasers.
Yeah.
Going to be another great conference. Not much more to say. I think the podcast says itself, right? Really enjoyed
thanks,
it.
Thanks, Brett. That was awesome. Yeah. Really appreciate you being on.
Thank you guys very much for the opportunity to be on here. That was a huge pat on the back and very much appreciated to be thought of for this podcast, and much appreciated. So yeah, looking forward to seeing you guys in Light Chasers. And Chris, if you want to do some videoing for Monica and I, I'll be up on that. Thanks for the offer.
Okay. Awesome. We'll chat.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome, Brad. Well, like I said, really appreciate you being on, and thanks everybody for listening to another one of our shows here. We really appreciate you all, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks for watching.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for joining us on the Nature Photo Guys podcast. If you have any questions, contact us at info@thenaturephotoguys.ca or message us on Facebook and Instagram at the Nature Photo Guys podcast. Visit YouTube and subscribe to our channel to watch all our latest videos, or follow and listen to our latest podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on our website at thenaturephotoguys.ca. We'll catch you next time on the Nature Photo Guys podcast.